Alain Pedel, who's the deputy CEO of Ping An Health, joins us now from China. Alain, we were just talking about issues here in the South African economy where the lockdown has just started. But being based in China, you've seen this happening for quite some time now. When did you first at Ping An get an understanding of what was going on with COVID-19?
So we started seeing signs pretty much in the third last week of January. I remember I actually left the office on January 21 in order to sort of join the Chinese New Year celebrations. And that was about the date. We were starting to get masks issued at the time. And probably about 3 days later, everything went into lockdown in Wuhan and other places. Which was right in the middle of the Chinese New Year, which is a massive event, as you may or may not know, a week-long holiday where Chinese people traditionally travel across the country to return to their hometowns.
And whereabouts exactly are you based?
So I'm based in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here for about 4.5 years. And, to your point, the COVID-19 situation started around Jan 20. But what's quite interesting, and I'm sure many of your listeners might be interested to know, but on February 10, we started bringing people back into the office. So all in all, it was about a three and a half week lockdown. But in fact, it took about 5 weeks to get things back to a state of some normality.
Are you there now, Alain?
Yes. I left back to China on February the 15th, and I've been in the office since. My family returned about 2 weeks ago, so they're just about to come out of quarantine. And I think, you know, one thing that I really need to say, speaking to everyone who's going through this in so many other places, is there's definitely light at the other side of the tunnel. Things are definitely not back to normal in Shanghai, but it's functioning. Society's functioning again. We're still doing temperature checks into the building. People are all wearing masks. You still have to show your QR code as you go into restaurants or into public transport to prove that you've been in Shanghai for 14 days. But we're interacting again.
Alain, you're there as the deputy CEO of what's a massive business now that Discovery owns 25% of, but you obviously are South African, yeah, as we can hear from your accent. Do you think that the Chinese, the way the Chinese have handled it, could be applicable in South Africa? I know we're trying, but can we do the same thing here?
Whenever we talk on this side,
we just lost him now as well. Oh dear, David. But isn't it fascinating to actually hear the insights that you get from that side? I'll try Alain again, and perhaps we have more luck this time. Shanghai is a long way away.
But he said, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's so good to hear someone who's gone through it. Whether we can apply the same kind of disciplines here is debatable. If we can, are you there?
Okay. Yeah,
if we can enforce it.
Alain, sorry, man, we lost you. It appears as though the problem is on the deep connection. But you were just talking about getting whether we can apply it in South Africa the way that it's been applied in China.
Yeah, the home quarantine, the tracking, tracing, the shutdowns, I think are absolutely replicable. I think, some of the things the Chinese have done spectacularly well, I would say, happening right down at the local organizing level, where sort of right down at the suburb level, we've got officials and volunteers monitoring section of suburb, where they're monitoring people coming in and out. And that's, I think, a very important step by the time South Africa moves into the stage of people moving around again. So some form of sort of controlled reintegration. I hope that technique is applicable elsewhere. But the organizing capabilities of the Chinese have been astonishing. The other things that they've done, which I think have been really interesting, was that they've involved private companies in a way, which I think, you know, many other countries can aspire to. But for example, we've been very engaged in helping coordinate inside the Fingam Group the purchases of local produce from distressed communities and sending those as kind of food supplies to Wuhan. So what you do is, as a private company, you're able to sort of support the efforts of government on both sides of the financial equation, you know, helping stimulate the demand and keeping, you know, keeping these rural communities sort of in business. And at the same time, obviously addressing the challenges that they're facing Wuhan when a city of over 10 million people goes into lockdown.
Sorry, Alain, listening to the results presentation, the interim results presentation, where there was a question about Ping An's exposure to the to COVID-19. Of course, at that stage, it hadn't really hit the rest of the world. And the response was that the government is actually picking up the tab. How does that work?
Well, so maybe just a second on our business. China has a social health insurance program which covers basically 99% of the citizens. So every Chinese person has access to healthcare, and most people make use of it. Certainly, the idea is that the best doctors are in the AAA hospitals, which are all government-run, and you've got the advantage of being able to get reasonably good care at a pretty good price. But there is a downside. There's long waiting times. The hospitals aren't necessarily the most pleasant environment for people to be in. And so what we provide as cover is effectively a form of top-up. And so in the context of our business, the government has taken the full responsibility of paying for essential healthcare. And all treatment related to COVID-19 will be covered by the social health insurance program. What we can do as an insurance company is that we can help facilitate upfront funds. So for individuals who don't have money at the point they go to the hospital and they need to pay some form of admission fee, which they can still get back from the government, but they may not have the cash flow, so we help them with that. There are certain forms of after-diagnostic treatments where you may need to go back for visits, which may not be fully covered by the government. We also provide maybe very thin levels of death benefits for some of our customers. That's not standard in our policy. But by and large, it's the government system that funds treatment.
How's the progress going from the Chinese scientists' perspective on finding cures or vaccines or at least some kind of assistance to fighting COVID-19 on a clinical basis?
Yeah, so I'm not a clinical expert, and certainly it's tricky to keep up to date with all the research that's being done. But there are several tests being conducted, often with very large samples, working, you know, very hard at finding some form of vaccine or immunization. There have been no declarations of success as yet. The language we see is promising trials. And certainly there is quite a lot in the news about work, you know, progressing rapidly. But certainly nothing that makes me think we're on the cusp of success.
And if you take the level of commercial activity, you've been back at the office, as you said, and other colleagues as well, from Shanghai being pre-COVID-19 a level of 100, where would it be right now?
I would say a city like Shanghai is probably at around 80 or so. I think there are other more industrial cities where I think things are certainly not at that level. So certainly heavy manufacturing. There's all kinds of issues. So there's still some transport restrictions across the country. There's still people who are still in their hometowns that may find it difficult to get back to the factories. And the factories themselves, you know, went through a period of being unable to produce anything and are now going through a period of uncertain demand. So certainly there's challenges there. In other industries, I think specifically the restaurant and services environment, small businesses that do hairdressing and these kinds of things. I think those types of businesses are still finding things a bit tough. Things that cannot be transacted online are having the toughest time. The online businesses have gone through an enormous boom phase. I'm not sure how aware of this you are, but the Chinese economy is extraordinarily online. And, you know, in a city like Shanghai, my sort of 20 to 30-year-old staff would probably pretty much only transact online. They don't have a credit card. They never use cash. They buy everything through their phones. And so the infrastructure is set up around that. And what this epidemic has done and what the shutdown has done has moved some of the sort of the laggards onto these online systems as well.
Elaine, could you give us a time span? Because obviously sitting where we are in South Africa, we're now trying to work out how long it will be before we can get to the place that you're at now in China.
I know. I've thought about that often. So as I said, so January 21 was when we first started seeing masks being issued. Lockdown happened about January the 23rd. And then February the 10th, certain businesses started going back to work. So that's 3 weeks. It seemed like a very long time. We started going back to the office where we had 20% of our staff in the office on a given day. So everyone basically worked in one day a week. And then we upped that week by week, 20, 40, 60, et cetera. So that's another 5 weeks after that. So I'd say after 8 weeks, we were at a point where people were in the office, but meetings were heavily restricted. Everyone wears masks, you temperature scanned on the way in and the way out. And it's taken another, I'd say another 3 or 4 weeks to get to a point where it feels somewhat normal. But even today, if we have a meeting, people will be wearing masks as a general rule and precaution. Perhaps not sitting too close to one another. Generally speaking, most business travel is off. Although that's also started to come back to life maybe this week.
Mm-hmm. So our 3 week lockdown, if we overlay that to the Chinese experience, would then take us to mid-April. Thereafter, it's still going to take maybe 8 weeks to get to the point that you're at now.
Yeah, I think so. And that's, of course, making some heroic assumptions around all the other variables. how comprehensive the shutdown's been implemented, and then also the way in which the controls and the kind of human behavior plays out in the period after that. I think it's difficult to map these experiences one place to another directly. The Chinese, I think, my Chinese colleagues would certainly kind of applaud the decisions being taken in South Africa at the moment. And in truth, there are many of my Chinese colleagues who are absolutely terrified that other parts of the world just didn't pay enough attention early on in the epidemic.
Elaine Peddle is the Deputy CEO of Ping An. Well, there you go, David. You've got it from the horse's mouth now. Exactly what the likely direction is for South Africa.
Yeah, what's interesting is that for us, it seems like such a long time. And yet when you reflect back, on January, January 20 by February 10, we're already turning back. That was only a couple of weeks. But each day seems like a year for us. But I think the bright side is it's going to pass. You know what I mean? And it'll pass within a couple of months, not years. And I think that's the positive thing that I'm getting out of him. We do need the discipline, though. And that's when he said he can't really map this out, how we're going to respond. And I think that's we've got to maintain that kind of discipline for this to go. But encouraging.
I think he's also far too polite in saying other countries. His Chinese friends are the way things are going in the U.S. David, is just it's just extraordinary, isn't it? The way that's
well, New York, because you know, particularly New York, where everybody's so close on top of each other. You know, my daughter's there, and we talk to her every day. They're taking it in their stride. It's harder, you know, where it's hardest is on teenagers, on kids. They are homeschooling at the moment. They're getting lessons, but I mean, for a 10-year, for a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, it's particularly demanding, because I don't think they've got the same sitting power, you know, that we have, or the same patience that we have. But they have to do it there. You know, that's where it can explode. They have opened up new hospitals there, so the beds, you know, there are plenty of beds, and they've made a lot of provision. But I mean, it's still very scary in the big cities.